where we came from, where we've been. They're eternal questions that say a lot about where we're going as the human race. Welcome to Ancient Mysteries on the Air. Welcome to Ancient Mysteries on the Air. I'm Jim Harold. So glad to be with you once again. And to me, one of the most interesting thing about ancient peoples and their ways and so forth is the way that they looked at the sky and looked at the sun and things like solstices and equinoxes. And how does all of that play into these sites, symbols, and beliefs across the world? And we are going to talk exactly about that today because our guest is Laura Atwood, along with her husband. She has written the book Ancient Solstice, Uncovering the Spiritual Meaning of the Solstices and Equinoxes. And it's going to be a very interesting discussion indeed. Laura is an author and researcher and practitioner of her native Indo-European tradition. She considers her tradition, as well as many others, to derive from what she and her husband have called the religion of the sun, which spread to large parts of the world in ancient times. She is the author of the book Ancient Solstice, as I said, and co-author of, and there's been some changing of the titles here, so we'll get the scoop from Laura, but there's two different books. And she runs the website, I believe it's pronounced SacroSoel, but if I'm wrong on that, SacroSoel.com, and the YouTube channel of the same name where she presents her research. Laura, welcome to the program today.
Hi, Jim. Great to be with you.
Is that the correct pronunciation of the website, SacroSoel?
SacroSoel, yes. It's an ancient language spoken about 4,000 years ago. So, 6,000 or more years ago, actually, yeah.
Well, I'm glad I got it right. Now, tell us the name of the two books. I know the one has recently been retitled as Ancient Solstice, and the other one was?
The other one is called The Ancient Religion of the Sun, so that's the one that I've authored, yeah.
Very good, very good. Well, thank you for being on the show. I appreciate it. Now, when you talk about this religion of the sun, can you explain what you mean and how you both came to this about the religion of the sun?
Sure. So basically, this all started just over about 10 years ago. My husband and I decided to do something for the solstice, which was just a couple of weeks away. And we decided that we're going to do something to celebrate it. And we started to research different traditions from around the world about how ancient people had celebrated the solstices. And what happened was just one thing led to another. And it was our discoveries as we began researching were completely unexpected to us. It just led us on a journey which has now led us to realize that in ancient times there was a common religion that actually diffused around the world. And we've called this the religion of the sun because it hasn't formally been given any name before. And we've written, as far as I'm aware, the first books about the history of this ancient religion, and we present evidence for how it spread throughout the world and how lots of different ancient civilizations that a lot of people might think are disconnected are actually connected to one another and share a common root.
Now, was the thought that the sun was a god, basically?
Yeah, so the sun was seen as the highest manifestation of the creator, being the supreme source of light and life. So ancient peoples describe in their texts why they worship the sun. And they said that it's because the nature of divinity is light, and the sun, being the greatest source of light, was the highest manifestation of the divine and was really used as a symbol by them to express the divine. And so this reverence of the sun is more than just a kind of worship of different astrological bodies. It had a very profound meaning for them, and they centered their whole religion around this idea of light and would align their sights to the sun to allow that light to come into their ancient sites, which were their places of worship.
I've always been amazed of ancient peoples and their ability to track the stars with astronomy and so forth with such precision, and yet supposedly not being that sophisticated. I mean, what is harder in my mind? Or when I think about it, I think, well, what's harder? Is it harder to pull out your iPhone and pick up an astronomy app and know what the sky is and what you're looking at in terms of the stars and different formations and so forth and constellations? Or would it be more difficult to do it over the course of hundreds of years with stones and sundials and that? In a way, I think that the ancient peoples were much brighter than we are because they didn't have all these machines to figure all of this out.
Right. So one of the remarkable things about these ancient civilizations is that their astronomical observations reveal that they were, they had knowledge that must have been accumulated, astronomical knowledge, over vast periods of time. So they had knowledge of things like the precession of the equinoxes, which is the slow transition of the constellations as they transition over where the sun rises on the spring equinox. And so this this kind of cycle that the constellations goes through takes place over an approximately 26,000-year period. And there's a large amount of evidence that shows that ancient people knew of this great cycle. And so what it implies is that the astronomical knowledge that they had, they inherited from some kind of very, very ancient source. And that's the conclusion I've come to, is not only their astronomical knowledge and a lot of their technical ability in terms of building ancient sites, but also their religion has a very ancient source as well.
Now, you make the point that if you look at some of the great spiritual figures in history, that their major life events happened to coordinate with these events with the sun, correct?
That's right. So, in fact, a lot of people might think that the solstices and equinoxes are something quite distant to them. But really, and this is how I experienced the solstice, was through Christmas. Christmas is actually timed with the winter solstice. So this is celebrated as the time of Jesus' birth. But it's also the time in the year when ancient people celebrated the birth of the newborn sun, because this is the darkest time of the year. And from the winter solstice onwards, which is when the sun is at its weakest, it's going to gradually increase and it's going to bring, you know, the coming spring and eventually summer as the days sort of lengthen. So there are a lot of different figures in history, such as Jesus, but there are far more ancient ones as well, whose major life events correlate with these solstices and equinoxes. And we started to realize that the reason that this was is because these spiritual figures often represented the path of the sun itself, and they had, which had a profound spiritual message and meaning encoded into it. So the fact that their life events coincided with these times of year was actually part of the religion and wasn't a coincidence.
So in essence, the sun was the parent of major religions, or in least in some cases, right?
Right. So if you think about sun worship, people immediately think about the ancient Egyptians, for example. So throughout their very thousands of year long history, they worship the sun as a supreme deity. People might also think of a lot of the ancient civilizations of the Americas, such as the Aztecs and Maya and the Inca. These were also focused around sun worship, as were cultures in North America that not many people know about, like the mound builders And then also you have the ancient Mesopotamians, the Vedic civilization of India, and many, many others. Many of the most ancient civilizations all worship the sun. And people often think, well, you know, this is just because, you know, the sun is sort of an obvious choice for something to worship, and it's just about agriculture and waiting for crops to go on. It's kind of just by chance that they all happened to share this similar sun worship. But I actually thought that initially, that's what I'd sort of been brought up to believe. But as we research, we realize that these civilizations share far more in common than just a simple worship of the sun. For example, many of them share the same building style. So pyramids, for example, that are aligned to the sun at the solstices and equinoxes can be found throughout the world in many, many different places. They can be found, step pyramids in the Americas, just as they're found in Egypt. And in fact, they were started to be built at around exactly the same time in both places. So this is not a coincidence.
Now, also these ancient sites, you mentioned the mounds. I actually live in Ohio, the American state of Ohio, and we have some really interesting mounds here, like the Serpent Mound and different ones that I've been at. And actually, when I was in college back in 1912, not 1912, but you get my point. Yes. We did a video documentary. I was the producer and writer on a video documentary that we did for schools in our state, which played for years, as I understand it, in the schools. And I learned so much, and it was so interesting. But not only those sites, I've also been lucky enough to be to Stonehenge. I haven't made it to the Great Sphinx yet.
Yeah.
I hope I do. But these sites had a lot to do with these equinoxes and solstices, correct?
Absolutely. They were central to them. So, for example, the Great Sphinx stares precisely at the rising sun on the spring equinox. Stonehenge is aligned to the rising sun on the summer solstice. Serpent Mound has a number of alignments to the solstices and equinoxes, but its sort of head faces the summer solstice sunset. So these sites were clearly orientated and mainly directed towards the sun because of the focus of the religion of the people there. And so once you start to realize this, you start to see it everywhere. We've been trained to think of these civilizations as sort of arising independently and having very separate belief systems. But once you become familiar with the idea that there was a common shared belief system and religion, you start to see this sort of evidence for sun worship and the common beliefs and building structures, the common temple designs and the common cultural artifacts, even languages and DNA. There's so much that we could be gone into, but you start to see it everywhere, absolutely everywhere. And it's sort of, I remember when I started researching, I had this real isolationist viewpoint, but and so a lot of things were just kind of hiding in plain sight right in front of me. It wasn't until some of these similarities really caught my attention that, you know, it all started to appear just how similar all these ancient places and beliefs and symbols and so on were.
Now, I do believe that when someone, even if they're well steeped in these kind of topics, whatever the topic is, actually, when they do a major project like a book like this, they learn something, or maybe they find something that surprises them. Was there anything in this project, this latest book, that surprised you, something that you learned that you weren't necessarily expecting?
I had like a number of major shocks, which I call sort of personal Truman Show moment. That kind of moment when you realize that the reality that you're comfortable in and used to, it kind of dissipates around you and you realize that you've kind of been in a bit of a false reality, and you kind of step out into a kind of new territory. And that really happened for me, particularly when I started to realize that ancient civilizations, sometimes even separated by continents, had contact with one another in ancient times, and that they write there's evidence of ancient seafaring and contact, for example, between ancient Egypt and the Americas long before Columbus. So that really, yeah, that was a complete shock to me. It completely changed my view of ancient history and my worldview, really, because we're still living within the legacy of ancient civilization and those events that happened back then. And even the religion, it still has a profound effect upon our civilization today, even though we don't realize it. So, for example, the winter solstice is still the most celebrated annual religious occasion in the world today. Even though most people don't understand it, it's celebrated by billions of people. So it is by far the most celebrated religious day of all.
And it's interesting because it reminds me a little bit of what I've heard referred to as many times as the flood myth. And multiple cultures that ostensibly would, you know, that are separated by distance and separated by time, all refer to a flood myth that, you know, there's variations here and there, but the general idea is that there was a great flood. And after a while, you start, at least I start to think, well, is really a flood myth, is that word myth really applicable? Is it more the flood fact? It's just different societies, different religions and so forth describing it differently, but it's pretty evident that something happened. I don't think that all of these different societies and civilizations and peoples would come up with exactly the same idea, describing roughly the same thing, if there wasn't in its root a truth to it. And similarly, that's kind of what you're describing here with the sun, that many different societies, many different civilizations, many different people had in many ways very similar ideas.
Right. So it's interesting that you bring up the flood, because this is actually, it's really central to the development of ancient civilization and the spread of this religion. So I completely agree with you. I used to look at ancient myths as just that, myths. But I really take a very different view now, because I've come across so many times where they've described things that have been vindicated by scientific discoveries that have only been made recently. So, for example, in terms of the flood, they've now looked at Greenland ice cores to figure out when the ice age ended. And they've figured out that that date, you know, within, I think, 100 years or something, happened at 9,700 BC. But what they worked out at that time is that in the ice cores was the most rapid climate change they had ever seen in any ice core at any time. And one of the scientists who worked on the core said that it was like someone had pushed a button. And what they know happened at that time was that there was a massive rise in sea levels. Now, this date of 9,700 BC just happens to coincide with Plato's dating for the end of Atlantis. If anyone's familiar with Atlantis out there.
Of course.
The date that he gave, yes, was about 9,600 BC. Now, that's got to be more than coincidence that Plato got the date right within 100 years for some kind of massive flooding event that severely or even ended civilization at the time. And we have all these so-called myths worldwide describing a massive flood. And they say, and people think Atlantis is, the story of Atlantis is limited to Plato, but I've found a number of different accounts of Atlantis in Hindu, ancient Hindu texts, for example, and in the legends of Central America, where they say exactly the same thing, that there was a prior civilization and it got wiped out by a massive global flood. And what happened to be the religion of that civilization was sun worship. And following the flood, survivors went out and they attempted to reestablish that religion in different parts of the world to try and preserve it and to reestablish civilization.
Now, let me ask you this. You talk about, in regard to, and I hope this is not too personal, your own spiritual practice. Have you turned to the sun? Are you practicing this religion of the sun?
Yes. So, look, the reason that I began researching this, a lot of people, they look into perhaps ancient mysteries and ancient history because they have an interest in lost technologies or just ancient mysteries generally. But my interest was always a spiritual one. So I wanted to find out what the ancient people had to say about spiritual wisdom and how that would be relevant to me personally. You know, what could I benefit from? Because they clearly had a profound knowledge of spirituality. So my research was driven by a wish to find out that knowledge. And so that's why, you know, my husband and I have sort of focused on the religious aspect of civilization. And it was actually through that that we're able to connect a lot of the dots because we saw the similarities between the beliefs, firstly, and then we sort of backed it up by looking further into things like language and DNA and evidence of ancient sea travel and so on.
Now, in terms of the religion of the sun for the ancient peoples, I'm assuming they would actually pray to the sun and maybe ask the sun for blessings, those sorts of things?
Yes. So the sun was central to their beliefs about the purpose of life. So the sun was the sort of heavenly, the symbol of the heavenly world. It was a place that you go to after death, and the aim was to go to that place after death and to reunite with one's own higher self, which ancient texts described as being one and the same as the light of the sun. So the aim was to sort of transform oneself in life to be able to return to the regions of light symbolized and even in the higher worlds where the sun and stars are. So that was the goal. And there were, you know, different practices for achieving that, but they all had that as their goal. And this was encoded into a path that the sun makes throughout the year. So this kind of symbolized the journey that someone needed to undertake in their life in order to reach that summer solstice point, that time of greatest light, which is sort of ascension into the divine realm.
Now, you mentioned something interesting, that people thought the sun was the center of life and they would ascend to it upon their death. Boy, that sounds a lot like, you know, the concept of heaven. You ascend to the sky. I mean, again, there are these parallels, it seems like.
That's right, Jim. You start seeing them everywhere. Once you know, look, they just emerge everywhere. Yeah. And so a lot of these concepts and ideas actually have very, very ancient roots, and they're still part of a lot of our religious beliefs today.
And I kind of touched on this before, but I mean, ancient peoples had a lot of intelligence, and I believe that we've kind of lost the thread. I mean, we're great. You know, I'm looking around the room. I've got a million and one gadgets here doing the shows, and I love technology, and it's great. But sometimes we've kind of lost the thread of being human. What did you find about ancient peoples and their spiritual awareness, maybe compared to where we're at today?
Well, actually, they talk about basically like a cycle of world ages where civilization tends to start off in a golden age, like a period of great spirituality where, you know, people are really focused around their own spiritual development, but that over time, this declines and people become more and more focused around the material pursuits of life. And this particular time that we're living in, ancient peoples had long sort of prophesied, if you will, or spoken about or thought was coming, in which people would basically be living in a kind of a dark age spiritually. So yeah, I mean, we have kind of lost touch in many ways with our environment, and but it's kind of more than simply, you know, sort of enjoying the outdoors. It's really understanding that, and this is how ancient peoples described and saw it, is that all of creation is really imbued and imbibed with these principles from the divine. These sort of, people call them divine laws, and so nature itself is imbued with profound truths. And when you know how to see and what you're looking for, you start to see in nature these sort of profound truths reflected back to you. And that's why a lot of the times ancient peoples used symbols of the natural world, not because they were simply, you know, very simple-minded people, but because they understood how creation imbues these sort of this wisdom and these higher principles. And so that's why the sun, for example, was very important to them as a source of light, and that they sought to commune with that light and to really to feel it and sense it. So more than just kind of looking at it, but to really to sense its spiritual energy and to benefit from it. So there's actually a lot of depth in and meaning in being in the natural world from a spiritual perspective once you understand some of these principles that ancient people were talking about.
Laura, it's been a great conversation. We've been talking about Ancient Solstice, your book, and the religion of the sun. Fascinating, fascinating discussion. Where can people go if they want to find the book and more about all of your research?
So they can go to my website, which is sacrosawell.com. So sacrosawell.com. And that means sacred sun in Proto-Indo-European, if you're wondering. So sacrosawell.com. From there, you can find the books and the YouTube channel and my Twitter.
Very good. Our guest has been Laura Atwood. The book we discussed today is Ancient Solstice, Uncovering the Spiritual Meaning of the Solstices and Equinoxes. Laura, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Jim. It was great.
And thank you for tuning in to Ancient Mysteries on the Air, and keep exploring those mysteries. We'll talk to you next time. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.